Audio hosting for Comics Are Great is provided by Kablam, KABLAM.com, the one-stop printing solution for independent comics publishers. This time on the show,
drawing the shapes,
swimming with the natives.
There could be piranhas, but you'll be okay.
All this and more on Comics Are Great. Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live every Wednesday at 12:30 Eastern Standard Time at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the corner of 5th and William. And my name is Jersey Droz. I'm a cartoonist and teaching artist. And with me today are some exciting people, starting with the amazing Janie Ho of ChickenGirlDesign.com, The Reindeer Rebellion, and then Light the Menorah are both available on your site.
Yeah. Right now I'm working on a follow-up of the Reindeer Rebellion book for Sterling that's coming out next year, next Christmas. And, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've been working on that. And they gave me only 3 months to work on it, which was a lot shorter than the previous books. So I was just like, I can't do anything else but just this book and just try to get it out the door. So.
And are you doing these in Illustrator?
Yep, this is the first book I'm actually doing the sketches in, besides the thumbnails, like in pencil, but everything else I just did grayscale in Illustrator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, first time, so we'll see how that turns out. I think it's okay. It's looking okay, so.
Your stuff always looks pretty good. I'm sure it's going to be well received. And then also you did a couple graphic novels. You did T-Ball Trouble and Lily's Lucky Leotard.
Yeah.
What company were those for?
I think Capstone.
They were like for like young readers.
Oh, they're for really young readers. So really simple. So a lot of work. That was like my first little taste of like doing comics. And even for little kids, it's so much work. It's because it's like every panel, I feel like, it's its own illustration. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A comics page has upwards of, 4 to 6 to even as many as 9 illustrations on there.
Yeah.
So it's pretty challenging, isn't it?
It's a lot of work. I just get like, wow, a lot more respect for comic artists now. So.
Well, you are a comics artist. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but to do it in Illustrator, that was a little crazy. I felt like that was a lot more work than just like doing it by hand. I don't know.
Well, maybe we can get a demo later on. We got it set up so that we can maybe do a demo.
if you found this out like 5 minutes ago, everyone.
Janie got here. I was like, hey, good news. You get to do some drawing on the air. Isn't that fun? What you normally get paid for, I'm asking you to do for free on my show. Oh, I'm such a good man. Ryan, you do a lot of stuff. But first, I got to congratulate you for getting into the Machine of Death anthology. You got a story in there coming out. When does that come out?
Comes out sometime next year. They haven't announced it yet. Hopefully it comes out on one of the days that Glenn Beck book comes out, because last time that worked out for him.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of a friendly rivalry going.
For more on that, you can check out Comics Are Great episode 14, comicsaregreat.com/CAG14, where David Malky was on and he talked about that. Yeah, Glenn Beck wound up poo-pooing Machine of Death, not understanding what it was, which kind of helped rocket it to the number one slot on Amazon when it came out.
Yeah, right? As soon as I found out, I got in and I went to Amazon to figure out when all his books are coming, and I posted this. We need to come out on one of these dates.
what's your story going to be for it?
It's called Killed in a Riot, and it's kind of based on my time in India. It's tells a story about, for those that don't know what the Machine of Death is, it's a series of stories about a machine that you put your finger in it and it will tell you how you will die, like in a short sentence. And you don't know when, but you know how you will die. And my story is how that would affect the culture in India. And it's based on all the things that I noticed when I lived there for a little over 2 years working in an Indian call center.
Cool. So, yeah, that's at machineofdeath.net is where you can find out more about it. So you're going to be doing a podcast for it, because they also do podcasts on the site of, like, readings of the stories from the book. Mm-hmm. A lot of really cool media on that site. Mm-hmm. So first, I had to congratulate you for that. The other thing that we didn't get to talk about, it came out right after you were on the show last time, was the complete Ryan Estrada collection. What is this? It's at ryanestrada.com/complete. So.
Well, I mean, that actually might have been after talking about that. I was always talking about making things as easy as possible for readers, and I realized that if I'm giving my stuff away for free anyway, why not just make it as easy as possible? So I turned them all into ebooks, and I made it so that with one click you can download every single thing I ever did, which is like thousands of pages worth of comics and hours worth of my adventure videos. And you just click them there. You don't, it's as no strings attached as possible. Like I don't even have anything to track how many people download it. It's just you click wow. a button and a file starts. You click a button and a file starts downloading on your computer. It's like yeah. 1 gigabyte and has everything I ever did.
And is all this stuff under Creative Commons
yep.
that you released?
It's wow. all released under Creative Commons, so you can post it anywhere else you like and just spread it out there. I want people to see what I do.
Which we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. I also would be remiss in if I didn't bring up the fact that, let's see, over the last 6 months, you were almost eaten by piranhas. Mm-hmm. You were dropped off in a disputed zone between some different criminals.
Yeah.
Where the cab driver said, I'm not going any further. You get out and walk.
Yeah.
And then you
in
found
the middle
out.
A cocoa war, yeah.
So, yeah, you were in South America and you had a lot of adventures. I mean, you were telling me about this when you were in town recently. Man, your guide in South America sounds like a real character. Like, what? How many times did you almost die?
A lot. I mean, well, most of the stories of when I travel are situations where I had no idea I was about to die, but I found out later, and I'm like, oh man, that's a good story. So I'm never like walking through thinking I'm in a dangerous situation. But like, the guide you were talking about was when I took a trip through the Amazon, like a river trip on a boat, and it was just this crazy jungle man. That's what he does. He does these trips, and he just kept saying, oh, you can do this. It's perfectly safe. And as he would say this more and more, we would realize that his definition of safe is not the same as ours at all. Because, you know, the first time it was, yeah, it's perfectly safe to swim here. There's piranhas, but it's all right. And it was fine. But then later he's showing, you know, a few hours later, he goes out to the same spot and starts pulling crocodiles out of the water with his bare hands.
Like baby crocodiles,
yeah,
right?
Okay. It was a baby crocodile.
No.
You know, babies typically hang out with their mother who's just under the water.
Oh, God.
And then later he told us again it was safe to swim there. There weren't that many piranhas. And then we find out he starts yelling at us. We have to move our feet in a certain way because there's giant man rays. That, you know, I'm like, oh, the thing that killed the crocodile hunter. Thanks for telling me. And then at the end we found out that he taught all his babies to smoke because his shaman thought that it told him it was safe. At night, he and his whole family, which is a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, and a bunch of adults, sit and watch TV and smoke together.
Well, didn't you tell me something about where they believe that blowing smoke on things was like a good thing to do? Like,
yeah, it gets rid of evil spirits. Like they, at night, each one of them will go to a room and take a puff of the cigarette and blow it in the room to get rid of the spirits. And if someone's sick, they'll blow it on whatever part of their body is sick.
Wow.
I thought it was a joke at first because it was starting to rain. We were camping. And he's like, oh, I'll get rid of the rain. And he starts doing that to the rain so the rain clouds disappear. And I thought, oh, he's just teasing the gringos. And later I'm like, oh, that's a thing that you believe happens.
Wow. Yeah, so a very different standard of safety where you were. Okay, so piranhas and then the crocodiles. But yeah, tell us about the Cocoa War situation that you found yourself in, because that was frightening.
Yeah, well, the Cocoa War, I was going to where I met the guide to go through the Amazon, and it's like there's only one road to go to this whole half of the country. That's why I had to like go like 20 hours to the south of Peru and 20 hours all the way back up, because there's one road. It's like I think it's an 18-hour trip, but we decided to stop halfway. Sleep and then take the next 9 hours, and we woke up and everyone says, oh, there's no bus over there. I'm like, that's the only place this road goes. How can there be no bus? Is there a problem? Oh, no, just take this car to this town and just change cars and no problem. So I did that, and every car would say, yeah, I'll take you to this town, but no farther. You have to change cars. And I kept saying, is there a problem? No problem, just give me $5, I'll take you there. And this kept happening, and the vehicles kept getting smaller and smaller until I'm in like an auto rickshaw. And we're just going like our rickshaw is basically like a riding lawnmower with a thing around it. And eventually this guy stops and says, get out. And I'm like, what vehicle are we getting in now? He's like, no, walk. And I'm like, what? He's like, I'm not going through there. I'm like, why not? You know, we're speaking broken Spanish, but so we're walking. We realize that there's no cars on this road. This is the only road to go this half of the country. There's nobody there except for one time we saw a giant army truck full of dudes with like AK-47s.
Oh my gosh.
And that we start seeing like broken glass that's been swept aside, trees that have been cut down that look like they were blocking the road and someone moved them. There's like scorch marks where it looked like something blew up or was on fire.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, something is clearly wrong. And this just kept happening. And eventually it got there after many more tribulations. We got there and I ran to Google News and found out that there was a state of emergency declared because the coca farmers had like a war with the equivalent of like the what is the DEA there, and shut down the road, and they declared a state of emergency and went in and arrested everybody, and they saw pictures of people like lobbing like homemade bombs, and it was like hours before we got there. But no one would tell us that because they wanted the $5 for the
ride. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Somebody's got to be wondering. Somebody who's listening or watching this. Why put yourself in those situations? What are you, crazy?
I don't put myself into. Basically, the way I live my life is I just don't plan things before I do them.
Yeah.
I just, you know, the only plan was to go take a nice little Amazon trip. I just, you know, didn't research the road I was taking to get there.
You also went to like Machu Picchu, yeah. You know, and there's all these great pictures of you on Google Plus with you with like hamming it up for the camera with a big pile of skulls behind
yeah.
you.
Where catacombs.
Was the, yeah, where was
catacombs
the,
in Lima. There's a church underneath that is just full of old skeletons and stuff.
Yeah, and that wasn't no haunted house. That was a real thing. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, you went on this trip to see things, but yeah, then you find yourself in all of these crazy predicaments. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, not everybody goes to South America or Central America and says like, "Hey, I know, I'm going to go walk around in the jungle for a while with a jungle guide." You know, that's a little bit outside of the AAA planning guide, right?
Yeah, I do things that just like the way my mind works. I just hear about something, and I'll read an article and be like, oh, I'm going to do that. And I don't go any further and, like, figure out, like, research it further. I'm just like, yeah, if I just head that way, I can do that somewhere. Yeah. Just show up and look for a guy that does that, and there you go.
But to keep things moving, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about today, you got back home, and you found out that you had 50,000 people following you on Google+. What the heck did you do? How did you do that? Because, I mean, that's both of you were on episode 17 of Comics Great. That was what we were talking about, was, like, marketing and self-promotion and, you know, following your certain style of, you know, like your headline was marketing is just talking to dudes. But, you know, I was trying to jot down some things, you know, like I remember right when Google Plus was in beta mode and everybody was all these people were signing up, you started getting a ton of followers. And I think I remember you doing all of these different Google Plus guides, like a guide to here's how photos work. Like you instantly recognized that, oh, this is a great platform to post comics on, mm-hmm. providing your comics are more horizontally, you know, landscape sort of proportions. But you started putting out these guides like, oh, here's how it works. Here's how you can think about it. It wasn't like a definitive how-to, but it was just like a couple of little like cool graphical and comics guides to getting cartoonists involved in this thing. And I think that was part of like that was the first thing I saw of yours that was getting shared around like crazy.
Yeah, my early stuff started getting shared so much that Google like stopped counting. Now they can count more, but I guess they just didn't think anything would be shared that much and it just would stop counting. I'm like, you're Google. That's what you do. But like basically, you know, when I started, I just started because people kept inviting me and I'm like, whatever, I'll make an account. And which is what I do with every social network. And then I end up like getting into it. But it just so happened that at that time it was in beta and people were joining, but I was the only one of the few people that was actually posting new original content. Like everyone was posting animated GIFs of someone with a Facebook face being punched with someone by a Google Plus face and all that. But I was posting content and people were just latching onto it because they wanted to see what the system could do. And I first posted my graphic novel, Aki Alliance, like accidentally. I was just like, I'm going to post some. And I'm like, I wonder what happened if I just selected all 200 pages and dragged them. And then click, oh my God, I just posted a graphic novel. And I start reading through it and I'm like, this is better than reading it on my site because it, you know, dims the outside and it fills the screen and you got the little next button.
It does a really good job of presenting albums that way.
Yeah, if they're, you know, like you said, if they're horizontal, it works really well.
Yeah, because I posted mine, which is more vertical. And it didn't take as good because it shrinks
and you can't read it.
That's right, yeah.
That's why I started some of my other stuff. I cut the pages in half and do it that way. takes a lot of work though. But anyway, I started posting the guide just because I was like, oh, that was cool. I got to tell some other cartoonists how to do that. Yeah. And it started getting shared like crazy. And basically that's just what happened. I just started being one of the people that was testing it and seeing what you could do and seeing what you could put on it. And then I guess while I was gone, Google Plus introduced their when new people join, it recommends who to follow. And I'm on that list. So it's like, oh, you should follow Snoop Dogg, Britney Spears, and Ryan Estrada.
All right.
So I just keep getting 1,000 people per day adding me.
And the circle sharing thing happened too while you were gone. Mm-hmm. And everybody started sharing their circles, which also everybody got a big boost in followers. Mm-hmm. But what else would you attribute to this big success story of?
Well, it's just a matter of working in a community, any kind of community. Like I said, it happened because it was something new. It was a community and people weren't sure what it was yet. And it the first comic I ever got published online was called High Hunter. And I did it for the Quaker Parakeet mailing list. Before I even had internet, I had Juno, which was free email. And you couldn't go on the internet. You could just log in through a phone line and it would download your email real fast and kick you off. Okay. And I was on a Quaker Parakeet mailing list because I had a Quaker Parakeet. And I started just posting comics on the mailing list, and then those people would post it on their sites. And I had this huge following just from posting these terrible comics. That's when I was 13 or something like that.
Wow.
And it's just, if you can go into a community, and it's not like you can't just be like, oh, I want to go into that community. Like, I've tried to get my comics on attention on Reddit or these other sites that I'm not a member of the community. Dig, stuff like that. You can't just jump into a community and be like, hey, everybody, look at me. But if you if you're actually part of a community and you understand it, you can just accidentally do. I opened my Google Plus account just so people would quit bugging me to join Google Plus.
Right.
And I accidentally did this. So it's just a matter of when you are a part of something, artists will look at something and be like, how can I put comics on this? How can I put paintings on this? It's just something you do naturally, and just don't be afraid to, I'm not going to focus on it's a small community. I'm going to post my comics and this place where I've seen other people make it big, but they became big there because that's their world.
Right. Actually, somebody in the chat, I believe this is either Dave Roman or Raina Telgemeier. I'm sorry to call you out, but Maribel Mellonbelly. Ryan was a star of LiveJournal back in the day because he did that LiveJournal goat comic.
Yeah.
What was that? I've never been part of LiveJournal.
Yeah, it was just Frank the goat was their mascot, and I just randomly emailed them one day at 3 in the morning. I'm like, hey, it'd be cool if you did a comic with him. I bet I could get a lot of followers. And I just, because I had, that was another community that I was a part of and I understood. And they emailed back and sure, you can do that. So I did it. And all of a sudden I had, millions of followers there.
Wow.
Working on that. But then LiveJournal kind of disappeared after a while. And as the new social networks came out.
Wow. Well, it's still going, isn't it?
Yes, people are still on it, but it's kind of, it's not what it used to be.
Okay. It's not like MySpace where it's a mass exodus. Oh, this place is the ghetto now.
And it's still cool to be on LiveJournal. You just don't get the interaction that you used to.
Okay. I'm gonna change gears a little bit. But anyway, so yeah, I think that was really stellar advice. It's like play with the natives when you are engaging on a network of any type, right?
Yeah.
This is very similar to what webcomics advice was back in 2002, which was go onto forums where people are talking about stuff, get involved in the community, listen to the conversation, then contribute to the conversation. That's how you get noticed. You don't just go in with your big banner and say, hey, look at my comic. I did a comic. Isn't it cool?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's doing that in something you're already a part of. If you go into somewhere wanting to, win them over so you can sell your comic, it's still not going to work. You got to because it's not something you're genuinely interested in, and people can tell that. So
you guys ever see Happy Gilmore, that old Adam Sandler movie?
Yeah.
And then Shooter McGavin is hired, what's his name, from SCTV to
Joe Flaherty.
Joe Flaherty. And then and then after he hires him to sabotage Happy Gilmore's game, like, he's like, hey, you want to go to Red Lobster or, you know, Long John Silver's? And he's like, no, I got to go. And he grabs his arm and says, hey, I thought we were friends. You know, you don't want to be that guy, you know? So anyway, I want to change gears because I want to talk a little bit about illustration. This is a visual storytelling show. Let's talk about some visual storytelling. Last week, at the very end, Eli Nyberger, Ulotricus on the Twitters, mentioned some stuff about digital illustration and how, you know, it might make our lives easier sometimes if we just embraced more digital technology. And that sparked a question in my head that says, well, would it? Is it easier? And then it just so happened, I was very, very fortunate that I got Janie Ho on because you illustrate in Adobe Illustrator, which to many cartoonists, myself included, is a bit alchemical. I don't understand how you could possibly illustrate in this program. And then on the other hand, we got Ryan here, who travels the world, and you know, you get your computer stolen, and you never know if you're gonna get caught in a monsoon, and you got a deadline to meet. So you once told me that you draw with whatever is nearby, you know. So here we have somebody who is using a very what's the word for it? I don't want to say impenetrable, but a little bit difficult to understand,
I think it's just, it's different. It's a different way of drawing, but yeah, just different.
Well, I'm hoping that you can show us a little bit about how you do it, because we've got the laptop plugged into the screen here. So if you could just give us like a brief outline. I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but I don't even know what tools you use. Do you use like the paintbrush tool? Do you use the pencil tool? Are you making the paths with the pen tool? And then,
well, let's see. Well, I have a setup like this. I do have a laptop or an iMac. I have both. And then I have like a Wacom. I don't even have a bit. Like, I even have something even more less fancy than this. But, yeah, so I have a Wacom. But I use the pen tool most of the time. And that's it. I draw. I just pick colors.
Well, what tool are you using there when you do this?
The pen tool. So, what's this one? I'm on this, I want to say, 90, 95% of the time. I know a lot of people like to use the shapes tool to make things, like if I want to do a bunny.
Yeah, show us, if you could just show us a quick bunny.
Oops.
So you're just using like the shape tool and the pen tool, which just make shapes.
I'm just making shapes.
No way.
I hand draw everything. You know, even if I want an oval like this, I'm not using like the elliptical tool because I think that's too cold.
Yeah, it doesn't look like the artist has put their hand on it necessarily.
Yeah, so I kind of like the organic feel of just using.
And then you'll go in and you'll actually mess with the, are they Bezier?
Yeah, Bezier curves.
Bezier curves. You'll actually mess with the handlebars on those anchor points, mm-hmm, to mess with the curves.
I like to kind of like, you know, copy and paste.
Oh my gosh. So you're actually just building flat shapes with flat fills of color to start
with.
Yeah,
so look at this. It's just like three shapes right here.
Oh, yeah, you're switching to like outline mode to show us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So I can make eyes with this. I mean, I like to do a lot of copying and pasting too, but...
You guys, for those who are not watching the video, this is why you should download the video, because I'm watching her just magically make this thing come to life. I'm watching her fingers just work on those keys.
I don't know if people can see this part, because this part is important, the short,
key
commands.
Yeah.
I do a lot of the key commands, so. So, yeah, but it's, you know, back to the pen tool again, you can draw a little body.
Do you, when you use the pen tool, are you completing the shape, like going back to the final point so that the shape is fully completed with the path, or you just leave it open, the path open sometimes?
Depends. It depends. I don't connect everything. Like if I'm going to build this bunny and I'm drawing like feet or something.
Yeah, for those who are watching on the live stream, this is going to be a little low res, but when this video goes up live later on, as the high res video, this will look much, much better. But
copy paste.
So I didn't realize you use a lot of copy paste too. That's actually pretty good. That's got to speed things up a little bit.
Yeah. But I can, you know, even if I don't want it to be so symmetrical, I can always, like, you know, move it around, turn things around.
Or modify the curves.
Modify the curves so it looks a little bit more organic.
Okay, while you're working, I want to ask Ryan. She's a cheater, isn't she? isn't she cheating? I mean, she's using digital tools here to, like, she's not actually drawing anything.
Tools are cool, man.
You know, this is one of the things. While JD keeps working, I want to bring this up. Every time I see you, and I think this is one of the other reasons that you got a lot of followers on Google Plus. Every time I talk to you, you always say something that sticks with me for like a long time, and I have to chew on for a long time. I was talking to you about like these style experiments I've been doing with the characters from a graphic novel I did, and how I'm thinking about doing it another edition in a completely new style. And I said, but some people say to me, that's just not done. You just don't change your style midstream like that. And you just kind of shook your head and went, no. Don't get locked into a style. And then you said something about The Simpsons that I think was really... Do you remember what you said?
Yeah, well, I was talking about how the best... Whenever I watch like an animated TV show, the one I always remember is when they would break style just for a moment. Like, everybody remembers the Treehouse of Horror episode where Homer was CG. Mm-hmm. Like, was that the first, second season, something like that? Very early on, just because it looked so different and it sticks out in people's minds. And I always thought it'd be really cool if they did like a guest season on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like web cartoonists have like guest week where they have their friends make their comic. I just think that'd be really cool to have like an episode by the people do SpongeBob, episode by, John Kay. John Kay did
John
that
K, yeah.
Opening, but just to have a whole episode that he did, I think would be cool. I love it when... You know, when I watch a show that never changes and always looks the same, you turn it on, you can't tell what, you know, if you're watching a new episode or an old episode, and I lose interest quickly.
You know, it's you and a lot of the cartoonists I'm meeting through doing the show are having a profound impact on my assumptions about these kinds of things. Because I remember talking a while back on Comics Are Great with Dave Roman of YayTime.com, and I was talking about whenever I saw licensed comics based on licensed properties, like SpongeBob, as a kid, it would always bother me if it didn't look just like the cartoon. Mm-hmm. And then Dave Roman, being the nice guy that he is, said, I always loved it when I got to see another artist's interpretation on it. And like what you're saying, it totally makes sense. It is exciting. And so my opinion is starting to swing in the other direction nowadays. I'm starting to break free of that comic nerd who got a little bent out of shape. Like, that's not the canonical version.
Well, it might also be kind of a, I forgot the word, Uncanny Valley thing, where if someone is trying to match that style, mm-hmm. but they're not forced to go to a style guide, so it's close but not quite, it looks wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, when you get, if suddenly SpongeBob looks vastly different and is really cartoony and really big eyes or something, then it's exciting. It might have been, I don't know which mm-hmm. comics you were looking at, but it might have been something.
Well, I was talking about Transformers comics. So anyway, and I just wanted them to look just like they did in the show.
Yeah.
But that's like this. Ultimately, that's kind of disrespectful to all the artists who are working on it, and you're missing out on the opportunity to see like a different iteration that might be really exciting. Like, Jonathan Rector saying in the chat, look at the poster behind you, Jers. You know, this is a different iteration of the Transformers series mm-hmm. from years ago. So I want to go back to Janie. So what have you done now? So are you working on layers at all?
Oh, yeah, if it gets complicated. But this is, like, very simple right now, so I'm not in any layers.
So you just use, like, object arrange go to the object menu and then arrange objects to move things back and forth if you need to?
Yeah, I use keyboard shortcuts to move things up, or, up and down. But if it gets, obviously if this is a whole scene, I have sometimes 20 layers. But
not having done much illustrating in Illustrator, do you find that you have any kind of like system lag with that many layers? Because like if I'm working on a Photoshop file at 600 DPI and if I got like 15 layers, I'll see some, it'll start hogging some resources. Does Illustrator do that?
No. Well, I bought my old computer did that, and I bought an iMac and a MacBook Pro maybe 6 months ago. Both of those computers don't have a problem at all. And I use a lot of things, like I add textures, I put brushes. Still hasn't failed me yet, so.
Quick question. Could you demo how you do, like, because your stuff has, like, a painterly look to it when you do, like, the color tones? Like, you can create, like, some really nice textures on the characters with light and shadow. How do you do that?
I just literally draw in the shadows, but I also use a lot of Photoshop textures. They're bitmap. You can just kind of make your own, like paint your own. Well, you can get like CDs of like, you know, bitmap textures, and then you bring them in, you do a file place, and you just place in like a TIFF. And I don't know, I guess we don't have that, but it goes right into Illustrator, and you can just kind of like put it in.
Does it mask it on top of any objects then? Like, so it's not,
you can mask it, yeah, but you have to do it yourself. But
okay,
you have to mask it on top of it. So that's how I do it. You know, there's brushes.
There's like, different, like,
yeah,
analog
there's
style
like
brushes.
In brush libraries, there's artistic, you know, I really do like this set, the artistic chalk charcoal. So there's like different, so here it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you
and
can
that's all Vector
that.
It's doing right now?
It's Vector.
Oh, my gosh.
So look.
So like one of your.
So now I can, you know, I can draw, I can put my texture into the bunny if I wanted to, like if I make it like a little different colors. Is this Illustrator? What version is this?
CS4, I think.
Okay. Yeah, you can mask it.
I'll be very curious to see how that works. Does it work like how masks work in Photoshop?
I don't know. Because I don't know Photoshop that well.
We're trying to translate between one another. Eulotricus, Eli in the chat is saying vector layers are way less memory intensive than raster layers. So there's another advantage. There's another reason to possibly look at this as a illustration tool.
So you can mask it.
Crazy. So
you can, I mean, this is very, but you know, you can add, this way you can add textures in your vector, or you can throw in a Photoshop texture file on top of Illustrator, which I know some people think that's a little kind of backwards. You probably want to put the texture in Photoshop, but I'm more comfortable in Illustrator, so
yeah,
I kind of do go the reverse.
Did you find, I mean, how long have you been drawing in Illustrator?
Oh, gosh. 5, 6, 7 years.
Okay,
maybe?
So you've been in the ecosystem for a little while now. Do you remember if there was any kind of leap of logic to think about? Because like when you draw on paper, you're laying lines down and then filling in colors afterwards often, right? But now you're working like almost like in a shape. You know, you're starting with shapes.
Yeah, that's why I think it's just a different way of working. It's a different way of working. I mean, I used to draw hand, you know, by hand and then scan it in. And yeah. Then, you know, people think that you're tracing, but you're kind of tracing shapes on top. But I like the look of Illustrator, so.
Yeah.
But now I'm just so used to the pen tool that I don't really need a hand-drawn guide to place an Illustrator. I just kind of draw this way on top with the pen tool.
So. It reminds me of how, we had Brian Denham on last week. Was that last week? No, 2 weeks ago. Brian Denham was on, and he does illustrations entirely in Adobe Illustrator, and he has tutorials on his website, which you can check out at comicsofgrey.com/CAG35. But it reminds me of, like, you know, they say in character design, like, you should have, like, really good silhouettes for your characters. So it's sort of like working in that silhouette form rather than working in, like, a contour form.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like, back and forth. It's not so effective that I do sometimes have to kind of, if I want a character in a certain position, I do have to kind of quickly, you know, draw by hand and then scan it in or take a picture. But yeah, I guess it's silhouettes. And also I think my style is also lends itself to kind of that shape, silhouette type of deal. So
That's true. You work in a very abstracted style comparatively. I mean, it's not totally representational, right?
I mean, I don't know if it's like me, is like I want my style to be that way, or I've been working in Illustrator for so long that it kind of affected my style. Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a deep question. So, okay, let's keep going on the style thing for a second. I'm hoping we can get Ryan to do some drawing if you feel like it. Only if you feel like it, man. Okay.
Oh, hey, what am I drawing?
Fat Garfield. Bad Garfields, rather.
I draw that rabbit.
There we go. But, you know, the style. You're using the Pentel color brush pen. Actually, this one I think has a fresher charge on it.
I've never used one of these before. I have no idea what I'm doing right now.
Oh, awesome. Well, that's the way you live your life. Yeah. That's why you're always in such a good mood. But talk about how, like, the style is influenced by the tools sometimes, the tool choices that you make. Given that you don't have any preferred tools, Ryan, you tend to work in a lot of different styles too, right?
Yeah. Well, for most of my work, I tend to use just plain uniballs. I tend to carry a lot of those around.
Yeah.
It's very simple. I can get them at pretty much anywhere I travel.
Let's see if I got one.
But a lot of times I can't, and I have to, or I'll want to do a certain style and look for the tools to do it. Like one of the last chapters of Aki Alliance, I just, for some reason, really decided I wanted to do it with the cheapest watercolors I could find, and I went to the dollar store and got some watercolors.
Awesome.
Because the book's supposed to look like it's a scrapbook put together by an 8-year-old girl. So I just got really, I'm like, oh my God, that'd be so cool if I just did it with like $1 watercolors.
How many colors were in the palette? Like six?
Like eight, I think.
Okay, wow.
I think I only used like three of them. They were just hideous colors that I just mixed out of like the three that it seemed like they would work. But yeah, I love the, like, how you can change the mood of a story by changing, like, oh, look, like the book that I was just reading when I came to the library by Daniel Clowes, Mr. Wonderful. I thought this was interesting because it's a lot of, it looks like most of his, you can see it on the camera there, like most of his work, it's in his style. The whole book is kind of like that. There's a few breaks where, if you can see it, it's all a lot of the same kind of panel shapes and everything. And
if you keep pointing at the mic while you're talking, I know you're in kind of a tricky position, but yeah.
All right. But you can see every once in a while, he'll break into what looks like a Peanuts comic down at the bottom, and it totally changes the rhythm. And that's, this is kind of his, what the character is thinking. And it, you immediately, without them saying anything, you get that this is happening in his head. This is how he wishes what were happening were going. And it's more, it, you know, that style brings to mind like a more whimsical, you know, because people think of Peanuts, and it's
yeah.
Not,
here we go.
Everything's really serious, and then all of a sudden, it's really whimsical, and what he
and
wishes
even
were happening. Everything's simple.
Even the colors, all these muted tones in the reality sequences, mm-hmm. but then when it switches to his inner, what's going on inside of his head, it switches to simpler lines and brighter colors.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, and that really changes how you feel about it. But even still, it's still sticking to the same kind of panels. And there's a few moments like this one. The one I just passed. but there's one where all of a sudden you get this. And it's like with the shape of the book, this is like just this huge panel that just stops the book cold because he changed the way he was making the book. And yet it's a moment where the character is just completely dumbfounded and shocked. And you really get exactly what he's feeling just because he took the time to, you know, think about what would make this have the most impact rather than, okay, I have to draw him like this because this is how I draw characters.
It makes me think of that comic that you did that you posted on Google+. Z was the title of that one, right? Where you were playing this, what was it, Taco Bell game? It was a Taco Bell game where you have to collect all the letters and spell Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
And then you win, $1 million, something like that?
Yeah, you won $1 million, spell Godzilla.
And you got the Z first, threw it away.
Yeah, because my friend won a taco, and I got a Z, and I'm like, I'm going to collect all these.
And then you wound up later on collecting some of the other letters in Godzilla, and you got all of them except Z.
Mm-hmm.
And then you, the ending of the story, I've used this in my classrooms because it's such a really thoughtful moment how you arrange the panels to where you call the company to see if you can get another game piece, and then they say to you on the phone, there was only one Z. And then when you hear the words, there was only one Z, it's this long, narrow panel closing in on you sitting on the floor holding the phone with the look on your face that where you realize you just threw away $1 million,
mm-hmm.
which is a true story. So you threw $1 million in the trash. I hope it doesn't hurt too much anymore.
Yeah. My life is amazing. And if I were a millionaire 17-year-old, I'd have, I can't imagine.
Who knows all the dumb things you would have done.
Yeah. So.
Okay, well, While Ryan's finishing the bunny, Jeannie, I'm wondering if you could, do you ever think about like working in different styles, or is this kind of like a background thing? Because what's really important right now is just getting the work done. Like, you're too busy making the work to really think too much about experimenting with different styles. Like in your sketchbooks and things, do you ever play around with different looks and different tools to your work? Or
I don't know about different looks, but maybe kind of another step off my style. Maybe nothing, not a completely different, but I feel like there's always improvement. I don't think my style is just
static
yet. Yes, it's static. I mean, it's obviously, I get work from it, you know, that's great. I get my bills paid, but there's a different level of what I want to do with what I have now. I guess building on it, not really just off to a different direction.
What pushes you to build on it? Anything in particular?
You can always be satisfied with your style. I mean, I've been doing this for like a little bit, and you also get bored a little bit sometimes with your own stuff. So, and you're always looking at other people's stuff, and you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And you kind of want to add that on top of what I'm doing. So, but I'm also very specific about what I like. So, I don't know if I want to build something different, but maybe build on top of it.
When you look at somebody else's stuff and say, oh, that's amazing. And how do you, is there a switch that you can flip, or does this even register with you guys? Like, sometimes when I see somebody's work who's amazing, I'll be like, oh man, I'll never be able to pull that off. Sometimes instead of inspiring me to work harder and push myself in different directions, it'll stunt me, you know, it'll get me like into those pits of self-torture that artists like to do to themselves sometimes. Is that something you guys struggle with, or is it something where, you know, it just doesn't even happen? Or if it does, how do you get yourself out of that and use it to push yourself forward?
When I see something like that, I always just think, you know, it doesn't necessarily work on every project. This wouldn't work for the project I'm working on right now. What I do whenever I see something like that is I have a folder on my desktop that I just drag it to. And then every once in a while, I just flip through that folder and look at all the images and like, oh, this, the, you know, doing the arm like this would work with this, or this kind of background would work, or the simple color palette would work with this project or something like that.
Yeah,
I definitely have that too. The ever built like big folder on my desktop, I usually like to just drag. It just says inspiration.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It could be just anything. And then when you start a new project, sometimes like a personal project, maybe it's not for a client because a client maybe expects you to do, you know, your style. But if you're experimenting, I kind of like to, I mean, in an Illustrator anyway, I like to place the images that I pulled and just be like, why did I like this image? You know, sometimes it's just the color, like we said, the color palette. It could be the way that the people look, or could be anything. And then you kind of want to try it out, like a little bit of whatever you're liking onto your own style.
Yeah.
It works sometimes.
Yeah, I notice that whenever I try to draw in someone else's style, my style always changes, even if it doesn't change to be similar to theirs. Like, you know, like whenever I do like those bad Garfields, I'm not even drawing in Jim Davis's style, but because I'm trying to get out of what I normally draw, like some of the early one bad Garfields I did, that is completely, now I draw everything like that bad Garfield, even though it came from nowhere other than me. It wasn't my style.
Right.
And I remember it happens a lot when I do guest strips for people. Mm. And I remember one, I did a guest strip and, I noticed somehow the artist drew like black hair, like she left a space in that she didn't fill it in all with black. She would like draw like a reflection area in there. And I did that kind of, I didn't even realize I was doing it a different way than she did. And I started doing that all the time. And I started talking about how I stole that from her. And she's like, what are you talking about? I thought that was cool, and I started stealing it from you. So we both thought that we had stolen it from each other. And I looked back and, oh, she didn't do that. That's how my mind interpreted what she did, and then she saw that and then started interpreting how I did it.
Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool how I can organically.
Yeah.
I think when I think about it, drawing other people's characters, doing guest strips, also, you know, just like I did those He-Man reimaginings for a while on my site, and like just like having to interpret somebody else's ideas can sometimes give you insight into where you want to go with your own stuff, right? You know, because when I started doing those front reimaginings, reimagining my own characters and that style I was using for the He-Man reimaginings, it never even occurred to me. It didn't even cross my mind once that, hey, maybe I should be using this style on my own characters. I was just doing it for this fun little experiment thing. So just doing Jam Comics Drunk
Deck. I completely forgot that it was your style.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah, because it's still your style. It's not the He-Man style. It's a style you invented for that.
Yeah, it's a style I invented to interpret the characters in a new way. Yeah, so
it's the same thing I do with that Bad Garfield. Like, I used a similar design for a character I did, and I'm like, oh, I can't do it. I'm stealing from Jim Davis. Oh, wait a minute. Jim Davis doesn't actually draw like that.
Yeah, yeah. So you should explain the Bad Garfields things. That's another thing you can find on your Google Plus account.
It's just a thing that I like to do. Whenever I can't think of what to draw, or like if I meet up with artists and it's kind of awkward, like I just can't think of what to draw and I feel awkward, so I just start drawing Bad Garfields. Like as off-model as possible. And
you've got a huge collection of them now.
Yeah.
But not only just from yourself, but from other artists.
Yeah.
That was the cool thing when you posted that gallery on Google Plus.
Because Bad Garfields are fun because everyone knows what Garfield looks like.
It's a good social lubricant.
Yeah, and you know, everybody knows Garfield, and it's easy to draw even if you don't have a picture in front of you. And if you don't have a picture in front of you, it ends up so much better because it's just...
Okay, you know, I want to give you guys a chance for any final thoughts on everything we talked about today. I mean, in terms of like, you know, digital versus analog versus, you know, finding your place in the social medias. I say this because the last time we were together, I totally cut you off, Ryan. And I was like, okay, it's time to go. We're going to get out of here. And then you were like, never mind. See you later. So is there anything left, you know, tumbling around in the brain pans that you wanted to summarize this with? I got a final question if you want me to throw that, but it doesn't have a whole lot to do with everything we've been doing.
I know you're asking that because that was my suggestion, but I have nothing else to add right now.
Okay, well...
I'm like, Jersey, why didn't you ask? Yeah, I got nothing.
Oh, that's the way it goes. So Google Plus Pages. I mean, we were talking about Google Plus earlier. What do you guys think of them?
I don't really understand. I know there's ways to use it, but for like an artist, I don't understand why I would use it personally, because I've already built a big following of people who are interested in the stuff that I post and the way that I post it. So why would I make a separate page and have to start over from zero to get them to look at it?
Yeah.
And the only other option is posting it to both, but then why would anyone follow one of them if I'm just posting the same stuff?
Right.
I think it comes back to what I said about making it as easy as possible for people to look at your stuff. And if they have to find you and then read on your page that you post this stuff to this other group, it's making too many steps for them to get to the stuff. Just give it to them.
I've been really wrestling with it. There is a Comics Are Great Google Plus page, and it's got a couple hundred followers now. And yeah, you can find it at Google Plus. Just search for Comics Are Great. And it does allow for more granular sharing, right? So I don't have to pollute my feed with a whole bunch of Comics Are Great stuff, but this is a part of my life. This is why, you know, like, I wonder if this like is somehow... the use case is dependent on how you characterize yourself as a person who shares online. Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the three of us, for the most part, share mostly only professional stuff online, right? Mm-hmm. Like what we're working on.
I would say 80% is art, professional stuff.
Right. Or you know, like you and Danny Jones will get into a whole gripe match about clients. Right? It's like, oh, I hate it when they do this to me. But it's still professional talk, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's kind of off the record. It's kind of personal, but it's mostly professional. Like, it's not... for me, it's kind of hard to even wrap my brain around the notion of, like, what would I share beyond, like, what I'm thinking about in terms of comics or teaching comics or... you know, talking about comics. So I wonder if the use case is more like, okay, well, I want my main feed to be like my personal feed, and I want these pages to be sort of like the holding buckets for all the different projects I'm involved in. Mm-hmm. Somebody online, I forget his name. Ken Drab, he started up. He said he's going to move his entire site to a Google Plus page, or at least he's going to mirror it. He's going to like, you know, use that, because the reason being is that it's a push system rather than a pull system, right? Like a website is a pull system. Google Plus, it pushes. And I thought, well, is that analogous to, you know, as a guy who does podcasts, I've got an audience who subscribes through a podcatcher, through iTunes, and then it just gets fed to them. They don't really go to the site all that much to like look at the show notes. And that's why I keep mentioning the show note links. And then I got an audience that actually gets the podcast from the website. Two different audiences, but they add up to one audience. I wonder if that's the use case, right? Because now I've got, like, so what I was thinking is, like, wonder what would happen But I did a webcomic on a webcomic site. But then I also did a Google Plus page for it. And then the audience could decide, well, I want it pushed to me, so I'll get notified whenever there's new updates. Or I can just go to the site and check in every once in a while.
Yeah, that might make sense. If you're posting something regularly, it can be basically like a feed rather than posting the comic to your... And then another thing I just thought, like we were talking before about people who do like all ages stuff and then they do more adult stuff. You know, they might want to have a page just for that, so it's safe and they don't have to worry about what they say on their
good point
account.
Very good point. Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to get your take on it as two people who swim in those waters a little bit. So let's do. I'm going to close out this and let Eli come in here for some book recommendations in a second. But gosh, oh gosh, guys, this was a really, really, really fun talk. Thank you so much for, you know, and Janie, especially thanks to you for being so easygoing about the Illustrator demo.
No, it's cool. I know a lot of people are curious. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to have you back for like even more kind of like hands-on stuff. And I mean, yeah. I should also talk to ADL about getting you to come in and do a class on it. But then we'd have to get a bunch of Illustrator equipped machines for that. That'd be the hard part. Or you can maybe I'll talk to you later about that stuff. But so Janie Ho, chickengirldesign.com.
Yep.
Chickengirl.blogspot.com. You still there?
Chickengirldesign.blogspot. Yep.
Oh, chickengirldesign.blogspot.com. Well, what other places can we find you?
On Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, just my name, Janie Ho.
Yeah.
I kind of go back and forth with Chicken Girl and Janie Ho, but yeah.
And are you on the Tumblrs too?
No. I've been overwhelmed with like so many.
I know.
I'm just like, I kind of have to cut it off.
I know. There's too darn many nowadays, you know. These days I'm just using Postgres to post to a whole bunch of different ones because there's just so many to stay on top of. It could easily be 2 hours a day just posting things.
Yeah.
Like you need that when you got drawings to do. So, okay. So the Google Plus, the Twitters, and
Twitter,
the Facebooks.
Twitter, Facebook, find me. Yep.
And then, especially on Twitter, because then you get involved every once in a while in those kidlet chats. It's a hashtag conversation thread that happens every once in a while.
Yeah, there's a lot of variations now. So
are there?
Yeah, a lot of like different, they've spawned off to different ones. But sometimes, I try to be on there every Thursday, like 9 p.m. Eastern time. Thursdays. So.
Well, there we go. Okay, well, thank you very much, Janie. It was awesome having you here again.
Thanks.
Hopefully it doesn't take 20 episodes again before I get you back. Ryan, we're working on covertly trying to keep you here in the United States, but who knows? You may not be here after Christmas. Mm-hmm. But it's awesome to have you in studio. And Ryan Estrada of?
Everything's on ryanestrada.com and any social network. I'm just Ryan Estrada. I'm everywhere.
Yep.
I mostly post on Google Plus these days. The most because like I post on Facebook, I get like my mom responding, and then I post on Google Plus, and I get like 20,000 comments. So
that reminds me when you posted your passport, you had to get a new passport, and so you were saying goodbye to your old passport, and you posted pictures of all the different pages from it on your Google Plus page. And the best part was when I heard the tires squeal, like the brakes hit, and you're like, I just shared my passport with 30,000 people. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Is that dangerous? Yeah. It turned out it wasn't, right?
It's not. It's fine.
Okay.
I probably should have checked.
But yeah, you're going to have to be a lot more mindful about what you say and do now because you got a lot of eyes on you, right?
Hmm.
But yeah, so you can get the complete Ryan Estrada collection at ryanestrada.com/complete. Yes. Mm-hmm. Download everything. And he won't even know because you're not even tracking it. Well, thanks again, Ryan. So I'm going to make some noises for a few seconds. Eli's going to come in the door, and I'm going to have to ask you guys to leave for a second so Eli can come in. But then I will also, I'll hold up this drawing that Ryan did. And later on, if Ryan is okay with it, I'll make it available on comicsaregreat.com for some lucky winner.
That is a horrible drawing. No one wants that.
Somebody wants it. Somebody out there.
It's drawn with me reaching around the microphone.
So, okay, now we have Eli Nyberger, Ulotricus of the Ann Arbor District Library. Look how fast you can move.
How you doing?
Good to see you.
I'm a man of action. How are you, Jersey?
This was fun. This was super fun. Thank you guys for the rapid fire setup
and
for the
will rise to the challenge, you know.
Yeah, seriously,
make it happen. So
you guys are heroes. So okay, what are we talking about today? What's going on? What news things do you want to make some noise about?
Let's see. Well, you know, we got something. I think I talked about this a little bit last week. Our big project right now is the Freeing John Sinclair rally that launches December 10th is the 40th anniversary of this legendary rally in Ann Arbor hippie history. So that's a big thing that's occupying us right now, not terribly related to comics and such. Other than that, a big part of their movement was this legendary poster designer named Gary Grimshaw. And he did the original poster. He did all kinds of amazing posters in the 60s and 70s, and we actually had him do the poster for the new event. So it's been a very interesting thing, but the whole kind of poster scene is a mm-hmm. interesting beast as far as the way that they make their money. But but I did, in keeping with today's theme, I picked up a couple travelogue graphic novels down in the basement.
This is awesome.
There's a couple of these that are really, really awesome. And okay, let's see. Is this in the shot? Okay.
Oh, okay.
We got it. Okay, was the paper in the shot? And
yep. We'll see. Yeah, there we go.
Okay,
yep.
Excellent.
Got it.
So this is French Milk. I thought I had talked about this one before, but I looked through the show notes and maybe not. So this is by Lucy Knisley. Or Nisley, I'm not sure how you say it. It's very much just a travelogue of, her sketchbook from a trip that she and her mom took to Paris to celebrate her 21st birthday or 22nd birthday or something like that. And, you know, it's really cute. It's very, she's got a wonderful hand-drawn style. She mixes it in with photos and tells you, you really get the sense of the story of, thank you. You really get the sense of the story of her trip. It's also a very accurate picture into the life of a somewhat angsty and self-obsessed 21-year-old person, because it's like, she's here in Paris and she's depressed because someone did better work than her back at home or all this kind of stuff. And it's like, man, it's just, this is your 20s right here in this book. Look at it for everyone. So this is really cute. It does a nice job. It's also a nice kind of coming of age story because it's very much about her relationship changing with her mom as she becomes an adult. Definitely all hand-drawn, and you can also kind of see that she just, she just went forward and didn't look back. This was her sketchbook. There's no opportunity to kind of navel gaze on it, and you could tell that there's some stuff in the acknowledgments about that it was hard to let this work that wasn't really intended for publication go. And it's not all that different from Arkham's placemat thing that we were looking at
right,
the other week.
Right.
So that's French Milk by Lucy Knisley, and that's a good one. I also got two other ones here about Asia. This is Tonoharu. This is by, what's his name? Lars Martinson. This is the first of what I think is planned as a 6-part graphic novel. And it's basically, he was a English teacher in a pretty remote village in Fukuoka in Japan. And this is just his story of doing that. And he's got a super sharp graphic style.
Yeah.
Very, very...
fixed with lines. Yeah, it reminds you a little bit of Chris Ware-ish.
Yeah, definitely.
In that school, yeah.
And, the text on everyone, there's very few word balloons. It's almost all the narrative set in text above it. And, it's one of those fish out of water, gaijin isolation stories. And it's very challengingly done. And you really get into the feel of it. I don't know if any of the – in the back page it says there's 6 other volumes coming. I don't know if any of them are in
production. I have not heard of this. Who put this out?
So this is Pliant Press.
Hmm.
And I know this was boing-boinged when it first came out, so there's some real potential there. So I like this book a lot. It's very quick read, and again, one of those stories where you just really get the sense, especially because, as Americans, we can't read the Japanese, mm-hmm. So it's like, well, that's how he felt, because he could barely speak it when he arrived there, he was, so really interesting book. That's Tonoharu by Lars Martinson. And then I know I brought one of his books before. This is Guy Delisle, who is a French guy, a French-Canadian, and he did a lot of work managing overseas in-betweening shops for French animation and French-Canadian animation projects. So he's got one book called Shenzhen. He's got one called Pyongyang, which are all his, his experiences being, in some cases, the sole foreigner working at an overseas animation shop. So this is his Burma Chronicles, which is much more about his kind of personal family experiences living in Burma. Again, this is clearly hand-drawn, very, very vibrant and personal style, lots of great text in here, and he really, in all of his books, gives you such a great, great sense of the life that he lives in each of these different countries.
And looks like the characters are rendered in kind of a graphical style, but the lines are rendered in a very kind of neurotic, wiggly, hand-done look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's clearly, and I think it all ties into some of the stuff that you guys were talking about that we kind of got into a little bit next week, which is, this whole kind of challenge between the digital and the digital and the analog, I suppose,
yeah.
production processes. Because, you know, I mean, you could see just watching someone as experienced as Janie, an illustrator, just tear it up,
yeah.
you know, and you're like, oh my God, what have I been doing, right?
Right.
So, but I think that part of the challenge is, you know, you certainly, if you're really good with the sketch pad, you can toss something off on the sketch pad and, you know, but I think the big challenge for any creator, but I think more so for cartoonists, is overcoming, you know, dysmorphism for your work. Mm. You know, it's like it's never good enough.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And for, I think, a lot of people, making the step to Illustrator means that there's nothing you can't go back on. You know, there's nothing that's there forever. Everything is open to criticism and self-criticism and navel-gazing. You know,
that was a missed opportunity. I should bring Janie back in to respond to that. I don't know if you can hear us, Janie. If you could come in here and talk
Janie's
about
still
that,
out there?
Because that is something where it's really opening the doors to just never stop.
Let me see if I can grab her.
Oh. it's too good to not get her back in here. Okay. So I wonder if you can speak to this, Janie. I don't know if you heard us talk about this thing about like working in Adobe Illustrator means you have infinite undos.
Yes.
And well, conceivably infinite undos. So how do you stop yourself from not second-guessing every line, every shape, every color you choose?
I think I was talking to somebody about that on Twitter. Like, that's the problem. You start being a control freak a little bit. Yeah. You want to control every single line. Colors are infinite. You know, you keep changing and changing and changing. But
yeah.
You learn to stop it. Or there's a deadline.
Oh.
You have to stop.
Yeah, So, like, if you're working on a personal project, maybe just an egg timer?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, ding, you're done with this page.
But it's the control freak. It, yeah, the lines can be manipulated. Things yeah. can be shifted around.
I can imagine for a certain type of creator, it's like throwing gasoline on a flame. You know, to say it's like, hey, guess what? There's nothing that's set in stone anymore about your work. And
oh, yeah.
that's really, I think, the challenge in that. You know, when if you've ever seen some of the video of Jerry, or rather Mike Krahuliet from, you know, Gabe from Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
You know, when he draws, his habit is I think he works in Photoshop, not Illustrator, you know, and he does brushwork. And I think, you know, his habit is, if you watch the video, he draws each line like six times in rapid succession. It's like zit, erase, zit, erase, zit, erase, zit. Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
You know, and then he just iterates it so quickly.
Yeah.
And you can see that that's just his habit. But then once it's there, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really kind of a big challenge.
You develop an eye for that maybe after a while. Another thing I think about is, this is very similar to sketching, is one of the things I tell my students is that when they watch me sketch and like, you're using lots of lines, like I'll like scribble six, seven lines in order to get like the contour of an arm. And I say, well, I draw six, seven lines because only one of them's right, but I got to throw down the six wrong ones before I can get to that seventh right one. I can see that on a sketch, but it's harder to sort of like imagine that when you're on a screen because you have that infinite undo. I just didn't know if you had any kind of, I guess it's something that you just pick up, you get an eye for it after doing it enough.
Yeah, you want your artwork in a certain way. So I don't know, it's okay. I think for personal projects, that's when it goes a little crazy. But with client work, there's a deadline, just got to get it out there.
It's been an ongoing theme for the last several episodes of this idea of like letting go of something and just getting the work out and not being precious about it. I think that's another sort of mindset that everybody needs to have about work, right?
Well, I think another thing, you know, just again, as a reader, the art doesn't matter as much as the artist tends to think it does, as far as whether or not it go to the next page.
I just had a discussion yesterday with Kim Holm, who's going to be on next week. Danungaher Holm on the Twitters, cartoonarchy.com. And he was criticizing my graphic novel, The Front, and he said that it's too dense. You're trying to get through, you're trying to do story flow, composition, have detailed backgrounds, and have tons and tons of dialogue and lots of jokes. It's like when you do all of that, it's like it's sensory overload. And through the discussion, we came to the conclusion that I wrote that book for artists. I was thinking of my audience as, what can I do to wow my fellow artists?
Yeah.
And as a result of that, I potentially alienated readers because they're not noticing all of that artistry that I'm putting into that, right? So that's something we also have to think about too, is the audience isn't going to see a lot of that kind of stuff.
And you know, I know that I really loved a graphic novel when I go back and look at the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The first time through, you hardly even look. You know, it's just like, you know, you want to know what happens next, if it's a good story.
3 seconds
it's like,
a page.
Yeah, and it's like, if it really grabbed you, then you're like, oh, I got to go back and linger over this. But you got to get to that end before someone has that motivation to go back and really kind of savor the art. And I think that's, you know, that's a challenge. And, you know, I come at this as a manager of creatives, where I'm always saying, it's good enough, ship it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that that's a big challenge, especially for the independent artist who is working, you know, as a webcomic or as a self-published thing, where you're the entire production chain from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's – I can just imagine how hard it is to get lost down those – you know.
I think you summarized it really nicely. I think that's a nice thinking exercise for cartoonists, is think about that second read. You're writing it for the second read, right? So don't be precious about it. Do it good enough so that they'll want – and make the characters and story compelling enough and interesting enough that they'll want to go back and do the second read. That's a good way of thinking about it. Thank you for that, Eli. This is I'll talk about this off camera, but we're trying to come up with a title for your segment on the show. So I can come up with like a cool graphic to run across the screen. And we got to come up with a name for that. So and some of the things you always do is you always find books that are appropriate to the discussion, and you always come in with a closing thought. And I don't want to call it Jerry Springer's closing thought.
How about Eli talks about stuff he has no idea about? That's probably a little closer.
Eli's faking it again.
That's right. No. Faking it with authority. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man. So thank you guys so much. Anything else you want to throw a word out about before we go?
Just, you know, I think we're starting to talk about Kids Read Comics. And, you know, that's going to be really exciting, big thing here at ADL. And looks like we're going to hopefully get it organized with some other things that are going on in town. And I'm excited to start having news about that.
Yeah, kidsreadcomics.org. More news to come in the coming weeks. So, yes, that's going to be happening at the Ann Arbor District Library. Very, very, very excited about that one. I hope you can come to that, Jeannie. It's July 7th and 8th.
Should we still be around?
Oh, awesome.
I'm still in Ann Arbor, so...
Okay, cool. So thank you to Eli and the Ann Arbor District Library, and thank you guys for downloading and listening. This will be at the audio podcast will be at comicsaregreat.com. The video will be available at youtube.com/comicsaregreat and very soon at adl.org. So until next time, everybody, I've been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on the Twitters. Okay, bye.